Asian Pop Nation on Sin 90.7.
Hello there, and welcome back to another installment of Asian Pop Nation on Sin, the show where a bunch of Asians talk about Asian things. We started things off tonight with two absolute bangers. That first song we played was Too Much of a Good Thing by Indonesian singer-songwriter Nicki, and after that we played Blue Heart by K-pop girl group IVE from their latest mini-album IVE Switch. My name is Tracy, I'm the executive producer of the show this year, and tonight you'll also be hearing from Leisha, Lee, Jesse, Ethan, Annabella, and Xenia from the Asian Pop Nation team. We got a pretty hefty show in store for you all tonight. We'll be covering the absolutely unhinged HYBE versus ADOR publicity war that's going on right now. And if you follow K-pop news in any shape or form, this whole debacle has been trending all over the internet because of how unhinged it is. I'll be going into detail with Leisha on how the timeline of events unfolded, as well as the contrasting reactions that these events have garnered from international fans of K-pop and the Korean general public. We'll also be covering some really wild conspiracy theories that have emerged from this whole mess. After that, we'll be talking about DreamHack, the recent gaming convention that happened in Melbourne, including some on-the-street interviews with cosplayers that Jesse actually did at the event. We'll also be touching on some of the ways that the event was not so great this year. But before all that yappin', we're gonna go back on the road with the next song. This one is called Tokyo Drive by Asako Toki.
Hey, it's Asian Pop Nation on Sin, our resident show for all things Asian. If you're wondering why you're hearing a different voice, I'm Xenia, a fellow host on the show who's taking the music reins from my boss, Tracy, just for a little bit. If you're still driving home tonight, we hoped you liked the first song we played, which was Asako Toki's Tokyo Drive. And then we continued on with the Japanese ride with Chagi Rasete, or Infatuation Goes On, by Evening Cinema, and close it off with Omeme Tenten's favorite jinx. Now, jinxes tend to mean something that brings bad luck, and it seems like the K-pop entertainment companies HYBE and ADOR had a run-in with bad luck recently, but I'm sure the team can fill you in with the drama now.
I would say lately on APN, we actually haven't been talking a lot about big K-pop news and stuff. I'm shocked. I know we're a music show. We don't really talk about so much of the drama or new albums or stuff that's come out lately. I think just general consensus for us, it's like, it's been a chill year so far. We're only in May. Things have been going very smoothly until this news that we're going to be talking about, which... holy moly, it has been a hot minute since something this gigantic has occurred in the sphere, specifically in the K-pop industry. And yep, we're gonna put our two cents into the whole HYBE and Minhyejin drama. Oh my gosh. If you aren't aware about this drama, and I don't blame you, because it is quite hefty, I guess here's like a little crash course of what is going on at the moment. So as I mentioned, primarily two parties that are beefing it out right now. HYBE, which is a massive company in the K-pop industry. You may know them for having groups like BTS under their belt, but now they have ventured on beyond that and are kind of, I always like to say they're a pseudo Disney in the sense of they kind of make it almost their mission to buy out other K-pop companies in the past few years, put them under as like sub-labels. So since Dark Ages with just Big Hit and BTS, now they have sub-labels with other groups like Seventeen being in them, even though they're technically part of another entertainment company, and Le Sserafim, and I guess now as well, one of the biggest groups that everybody knows, NewJeans. Now, NewJeans, they are technically under the HYBE umbrella, but they are part of their own company called ADOR, and ADOR's CEO goes under the name of Minhyejin. And for bonus, I guess, context as to why the story will kind of like make sense altogether, she actually has been in the K-pop industry for a really long time. She used to be like a creative director for SM Entertainment, which is a completely different other company. Fun fact, another company that HYBE tried to buy out last year, but did not happen. But yeah, she used to be a part of SM as a creative director, but now she's under ADOR, her own company, her own baby. NewJeans are practically kind of her own babies, and they're under this HYBE umbrella. But recently, ADOR and HYBE are beefing it out because HYBE I don't know, in some way they had some intel which led them to believe that Adore, specifically Min Hee Jin and a couple of other staff members from Adore, were planning to take over HYBE. I don't know. Is that right, Tracy? Sort of like they're planning to do a takeover or something.
Not so much take over HYBE, but break away from HYBE and become independent. I think those were the initial accusations.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, right now, I guess Azor is kind of like a feudal state. They have to answer to HYBE, but HYBE owns like 80% of the company. Initially, HYBE reported, they like issued a press release, I think, saying that they had evidence that Min Hee Jin and other like high-up employees at Adol were like planning to use like foreign money from like Saudi Arabian stuff to break away into their own label. And this is really important to HYBE because NewJeans is under Adol and is like currently the hottest girl group in Korea right now. Like they are the top girl group in Korea right now. And that would be really bad for HYBE if Adol break away.
That was basically what initially started, and then all these reports were coming out of like, oh my God, HYBE is going after Adore. What's gonna happen? And then I would say where the drama really started to bubble up was when Adore started to, I guess, stand on their two feet and put up their own statements, specifically Min Hee Jin herself in a plethora of ways. Initially, it started with just like an Adore public like statement to the media. And in that one, they were like, oh, basically, disagreeing with all the points that HYBE has been saying. They're like, no, we're not trying to, like, we aren't actually doing this. This isn't happening. Our main issue is that we feel like HYBE, with other sub-labels that they have under them, they've been having other sub-labels recreate the sort of NewJeans aesthetic and magic in a way. Most notably, the new group that's out right now, Eyelid. You may know them for their song Magnetic, which is all over the interwebs and in the spaces right now. Very, very big song. And basically, Adore were saying that from their standpoint, they were kind of beefing with HYBE in terms of that because they felt like HYBE were going out of their way to replicate the NewJeans image. And they felt like even though, yes, we're all sub-labels, we're all under the HYBE umbrella, we are not family, we're not sisters. like basically kind of being like, we anything that's happening with Eyelid, we don't want it to be associated with NewJeans. But then when Eyelid debuted, according to them, so many people were saying, like, oh, Eyelid is like a NewJeans copycat, and they're like, we don't want to be associated, blah blah blah.
Yeah, when I saw Eyelid come out with their new song, I was like, wow, this is pretty nice. It reminds me a lot of NewJeans. Like sonically, it definitely is something that NewJeans could have put out. Honestly, Eyelid are not alone in copying NewJeans. I feel like, you know, half of the K-pop industry has moved to try and replicate the NewJeans formula. But I think the issue that Min Hee Jin and Adol took specifically with Eyelid, in their words, I guess plagiarizing, it's not really plagiarizing, but in their eyes, plagiarizing the NewJeans concept is that they're under the same label. And it's weird to have two groups that are so similar because, from a marketing point of view, Lee will know this as a marketing student, you want to differentiate the products that you have under your line that you offer. So if you have two groups which are too similar, their fan bases can start to sort of cannibalize each other and compete with each other. So it doesn't make sense. And so I guess Min Hee Jin and HYBE took that as like B-Lift Lab and HYBE, I guess, undermining them. They took it as like a sort of insult to them.
Yeah, and then on like the marketing standpoint, that's so interesting because I felt like I actually seen that kind of happen in terms of when Eyelid had just debuted. They went to Paris Fashion Week very early into their career, and when another big publication posted videos online, like interviewing various celebrities that were at Paris Fashion Week, they showed Eyelid, but they wrote down NewJeans
Oh
as like the
no.
artist that they were interviewing. So I was like, that was one of the examples where I was like, oh God, probably on like a publication, like media stand. I mean, we're out here doing baby media work here, but in a way, maybe Adore like would have seen stuff like this happening around Island, literally being confused to be NewJeans and been like, oh God. And from their standpoint, that was the main reason that they were going up to HYBE and being like, we have an issue about this. And from their standpoint, HYBE is not listening, I guess, in a way. So they feel like they're being backed into a corner because now HYBE is putting out as a big billion-dollar company putting out this statement of like, oh, you guys are trying to get away from us, da-da-da-da-da, huzzah. So now this is why we have this big back and forth between these two. And then the whole thing got even more dramatic. I know, it got even more dramatic in this very, very popular press conference that was done by just Min Hee Jin herself, the CEO of Adore. She did her own press conference and oh my God, this was crazy. There's clips everywhere online about it.
This press conference is probably like one of the most memorable press conferences ever in K-pop history. Like it's going to be remembered for a long time for how crazy it is. To like describe to someone who hasn't seen the clips, Min Hee Jin is dressed in casual wear. She has a denim cap on that's covering most of her face. She's wearing like a striped green shirt. So she's coming across as very like casual, like she just like rolled out of bed sort of vibes. She's very clearly emotional the whole time. She spends a lot of the press conference like openly crying. She started off with like, oh my God, all you reporters are trying to get bad images of me. Oh no, is this how famous people feel? Like she sort of rambles in a very unstructured way for like, was it 2 hours? It's like the furthest thing from like typical like corporate people in suit, mincing their words, using obfuscating language. She was extremely direct. She put receipts and she was extremely emotional through the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. On the receipts end, like, oh my gosh, she literally had like a presentation up with screenshots of DMs that she's had with the chairman of HYBE, Bang PD. And it was just like a bunch of screenshots on KakaoTalk, which is like the Korean messaging app. And it, like seeing that was so like, oh my God, it's like YouTuber drama. It reminds me so much of like YouTuber drama when they're pulling out receipts of like, this is me talking to a fellow YouTuber and they said XYZ, but this is like in a company beefing, which is insane.
These are exact. These are billions of dollars like worth of companies. And these are like, the CEOs of those companies beefing like YouTubers. It's actually insane.
Literally. And some of the screenshots were wild. Oh my God. One of the notorious ones for me was them having like a back and forth convo. And then I guess at some point, Bang PD was like, I don't, something about like, oh yeah, plans to take down aespa by December, right? And I was like, oh my God. And again, even not familiar in the K-pop world, aespa is another girl group from a completely different company. The company being SM Entertainment, the very company that Min Hee Jin was the creative director for in the past. So it was like, oh my God. And then there was also other screenshots taken. And then, I felt like in this press conference, she also name dropped so many other like groups and stuff along the lines. One being definitely Le Sserafim was one of the groups mentioned. Her point was that I guess she really did not like at the time that Le Sserafim, who is also under this HYBE umbrella, got to, I guess, debut first before New Jeans.
She spoke about this a lot. She definitely took it as like a betrayal of trust between her and Big Hit CEO Bang PD. To me, that was like the main point she brought up apart from the plagiarism thing. I guess she sort of used these two events as like evidence that Big Hit just like doesn't believe in Adore and like undermining them or like working against them in some way. I guess in terms of addressing the accusations of Adore breaking away that Big Hit had made in their initial press conference, she said that these were just essentially workers complaining about their bosses in an unserious way. That was the defense she used. And I guess those are the two main things.
Yeah. And then obviously there were a lot of other like small stuff here and there.
There was a lot of side quests in her.
Yeah, a little side quests that were mentioned here and there, which it was like, oh, was that information needed in this sense? Yeah, a lot of oversharing. That's why there were so many clips online of like the viral ones that y'all might have seen across the web of her literally having her lawyer next to her and just like turning his head and being like, oh, I don't think you need to talk about this part. And she literally goes, no, but I want to. And then proceeds to go on. And then there's all these clips about lawyer looking down and being like, oh God. Because yeah, clearly like Tracy said, she went into this press conference in a very, very emotional state.
I think it's really interesting to talk about the reaction to this press conference from, I guess, the fans of K-pop in international spaces and the Korean general public in Korea.
Yeah, because that's the interesting thing about this whole like drama, I would say. It's like on a out of Korea perspective, I think most people who know about this and are really in like depth about it are K-pop fans. But in Korea, this is seen more as like a whole general public thing. It's not exclusively like K-pop fans in Korea that react. I mean, tell me what are the different perspectives going on? Because I actually don't know that much.
Okay, so I guess in terms of the K-pop fans, because they're K-pop fans, they see this primarily as affecting their K-pop idols. And so a lot of the clips that went viral mm-hmm. were the times when Min Hee-jin mentioned an idol or an artist in that press conference, just like as an aside, like a very minor aside. And then they took that out of context, posted it on TikTok, and then people were like, she's coming after our group. She's trying to bring our group down. Whereas the Korean GP basically saw a frustrated woman, clearly emotional, who really hated her boss. And so they saw that and they really related to it. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of related to that as well. I guess with the international fans as well, there's the added language barrier. And so people only see what gets translated. And the things that get translated by fan translators are things that, I guess, support certain fan views or that pertain directly to their groups. The Korean general public sees the whole press conference. Like, this press conference was like live streaming on like news channels around the country, like 24/7. Like, I looked up Min Hee-jin in Hangul the day of, all the major news channels were like doing like live analyses of it. Like, they're like, we have an expert in contract law. What do you think about this press conference? Like, they were all doing that. It was actually insane. Like, this is big news in Korea. So I would actually really recommend people read up the Korean Jungang English translation of like the full press conference, because it is interesting to see it not in isolation, but as a whole thing, because I think that's very different to the image you get of it from Stan Twitter. A lot of people have been acting like the Korean general public is like delusional. They really can't understand where they're coming from. But the thing is, the information that they're receiving and the way it's being presented to them is so different. And also the places they're coming from are so different. It's no wonder they have very different views.
No, yeah, you're literally so right. And that was one of the things I was like thinking in my head, like a few days after everything blew up and all that stuff, of kind of like, like probably in like general Korean public, the sort of the workplace culture is viewed very differently and all that stuff. And Min Hee-jin, obviously, like, again, being like a female CEO, I saw like some conversations brought up by some people who were Korean themselves being like, there is a demographic of people that resonate with her because it, from their eyes, it felt like female CEO getting bullied by bigger conglomerate, fatty company. Korea, like the general Korean public's perspective on feminism and all that stuff. It's just interesting. I'm just kind of like, oh, I don't know. Like, if I try to think, even thinking through all of that and then thinking like, oh, but what do I think personally about this situation? I'm still like,
we don't know enough about the situation. That's the thing. Like, it started because, I don't know, apparently Ador filed an internal complaint to Big Hit is what Min Hee-jin said, but they can't reveal what the actual content of that internal report was because it will be like, they're going to open it in like a court case. So this whole, we really only have like one half of the story here because there's like a whole bunch of stuff they're not allowed to say because of legal reasons. So like, there's just a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense. Like the fact that Big Hit was accusing Ador of breaking away. Well, how can Ador do that if Big Hit owns 80% of the company? And Min Hee-jin says that as well. Like, that doesn't make sense. Who would never do that? On the other hand, Min Hee-jin says a lot of stuff that is very crazy in this press conference. So you really can't take her at face value either. It's just this very confusing minefield. And I think a lot of people have taken this ambiguity with this situation and let their imaginations go wild with conspiracy theories. This has been a really great controversy for like the most fantastical, ludicrous conspiracy theories known to man.
Yeah, if you're somebody who doesn't thrive on hard facts, but rather thrive on like, oh my God, how do people take these hot, cold facts and turn it into something wacky, look no further than this whole thing, because, oh my God, one of the weirdest turns that this Min Hee-jin and hype thing got into was cult allegations, that hype is secretly somehow connected to a cult. And apparently the evidence points towards a former girl group that existed I'm not even under it anymore. Leave G-Friend alone. Tracy, I don't even know how to.
I don't know how this started, but people think that like the leadership, the top brass at Big Hit are under the influence of this cult called like Dan or something. To be fair, in the past, a lot of super high-ranking officials and politicians in Korea have been found to be under the influence of random cults. So this might not be as far-fetched to them as it is to us. But still, it's crazy. Well, HYBE famously disbanded G-Friend, who was the former girl group under Source Music, right after acquiring Source Music. And then they debuted Le Sserafim under that same label, I think the next year. And so netizens are alleging that G-Friend was disbanded as essentially a sacrifice for Big Hit to please the overlords that they serve in order to bring, I guess, fortune for their new girl group. And they back this up with like the dates they supposedly were disbanded and debuted on, like being like auspicious or lucky dates or whatever, or important dates under this like cult religion. The whole thing is really insane. And then like gone through like another theory posits that like I think Oh My God by NewJeans, the lyrics are like a praise song for this supposed cult religion, and that Min Heejin setting the music video for this song in an asylum is like a subtle way of showing disdain towards this religion. The whole thing is just like complete.
Yeah, like even you verbalizing this to me, I'm literally just like, what the heck am I?
Actually insane, the whole thing. People are taking this like deathly seriously, and I'm just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I don't know if it's because of like the one of the side quests of this whole thing is the whole Min Heejin talking to a shaman thing, which like was the catalyst into people being like, oh, witchcraft has to be in on this, and then that led into cult conversations. I don't know. I don't know if that was like the shaman thing was like the beginning flame, and then everything just fueled to the fire post that point.
Yeah, that shaman thing is hilarious because, yeah, apparently Min Heejin's way of rebutting that was like, the shaman is my friend. Am I not allowed to talk to my friends? Which is a hilarious thing to say, I think, in response to that allegation. But I think the reason why it's gotten to this like crazy conspiracy theory point is because of how big this controversy has gotten in Korea. Like your average Joe, your average person is tuning in to about this news. It's kind of like the whole Reddit Boston Marathon thing where they were like convinced that some guy was like the shooter when he wasn't. Anyway, it's kind of like that. When you have like masses of people like theorizing with their big brains, their big hive minds, they sort of end up echo chambering themselves into some pretty interesting places, is my take on the thing. International fans are not exempt from this conspiracy thinking. I guess their conspiracy is that like every single controversy that Big Hit groups or any K-pop group has gone into in the past 2 years was because of either Min Heejin or HYBE, depending on what side you're on, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I guess it just shows you how insane this whole thing is, and the fact that there's technically no, I guess, quote unquote, happy ending or any ending, to be fair, about this whole thing. So yeah, this is like a to be continued, basically, this whole spiel. But yeah, I guess if you wanted to know what was going on, here's your little crash course of the HYBE Min Heejin chaos. Oh God.
It's gonna continue for months and months and months. I can't wait to see where it goes and what theories people come up with.
Time to get back to the reason why we love K-pop in the first place. Or, well, maybe one of the reasons. And I'm hoping that's the music. We've got Candy Crush by Artemis playing now, but if you're more of an anime watcher or gamer, you should stick around because we've got something sweet for you here on Sin's Asian Pop Nation. You're here with us on Asian Pop Nation? You like Asian culture and music? We got it. With Artemis's Candy Crush, Call Me by Jocelyn940 featuring Alan AC, and finishing it off with Bibi and Jackson Wang's Feeling Lucky. Because the team here on APN were feeling quite lucky when we got to go to the DreamHack Gaming Convention. But Ethan and our fellow cosplayer Jesse were the ones who were really there, so let's let them tell us all about it.
Hello, dear listeners. You're listening to Asian Pop Nation. If you're wondering whose voice this is me, Ethan. Tracy's just gone off air for a moment, so she's given the reins to us. That's such a bad idea. But anyway, last weekend, some of us went to DreamHack, which is a massive gaming convention in Melbourne, which was so cool. Jessie and I went. I'll ask her how that was. But first, we have some Vox Pops that she recorded. Take it away, Jessie.
Hi, this is Jessie, and we are here at DreamHack Day 2, and I'm here today with this lovely cosplayer. Can you tell us your name and what you are dressed as today?
My name is Asta, and I'm cosplaying Fate Sith from Final Fantasy VII. I am Remy from Colin Magazine, and today I am cosplaying Cloudbelt Tifa from Final Fantasy.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm dressed as Inugami Korine from Hololive.
Are you going to Hololive later on?
Unfortunately not.
Oh,
I'm a fake fan, and I don't watch Hololive.
My name is AJ. I go by Ajami Cosplay on Instagram, and I'm cosplaying Stargarding Ezreal.
I'm Clarency, also known as Mrs. Dottore, and I'm cosplaying Aya Drevis from Bad Father.
Did you make your cosplay? Did you buy your cosplay?
Yes, I bought the cheap one and then I altered it a bunch. I made my own bow, and that's about it, actually. I plan to do more, but I'm too scared to ruin it because I did spend money.
That is a mood.
My name is Lyndon, and I am dressed as a colonel from the Yugoslav People's Army. I am quite interested in history, and that sort of led me to wearing uniforms. And I specifically focus on the Cold War in the Eastern Bloc, with a focus on the armies of the German Democratic Republic and the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia.
Can you tell me a bit about what got you into cosplay, what got you into this area of interest?
When I was probably about 13 or 14, I was really interested in anime, and my friend group at the time, no one was really interested in it with me, but I found a poster for Armageddon, the Oz Comic Con before Oz Comic Con. It was my very first convention, and I saw cosplayers, and I was like, oh my god, this is so cool.
I guess what brought me into cosplay is the fact that I used to go to conventions a lot when I was little, and I was like, oh my god, people are so cool, and then I realized I can do that.
You can be the
cool not person. Paid to be that.
In 2020, when I graduated high school, I had a really big thing for Hanji from Attack on Titan, and I wanted to dress up.
Valid. Valid.
I wore her costume, and it kind of snowballed.
I love Sora from No Game No Life. He's like a literally me character.
Oh, that is
so. So I was like, hey, let's cosplay him. Let's go to Supernova, have fun. Then it just started snowballing. Then I met great people. Then I started my Instagram account, met even more great people.
I don't even want to say how many years later. Here we are today.
Here we are. Huh? If you don't mind me asking, can you tell me what your day job is?
I do clothing commissions, but other than that, I'm a full-time student.
I am not employed at Moon. I am a student at university.
Lovely.
My day job.
Yeah, your day job.
Count it. Very different to cosplay. Cosplaying is like a way to channel the creative energy because there's no way I can do that.
When the county. Yeah.
I'm studying to become a high school teacher.
Oh,
so if I'm teach my the teacher students see this, Nate did it.
My day job is a baker. I bake stuff. I serve.
I work as a barberist at Airport Lounge. If you want me to create cocktails, I have a few recipes in my head. If you just want a normal latte, sure. Or if you want to annoy me, have like a double shot decaf latte with soy milk.
That sounds like something that could kill me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I work in digital marketing, but I also run Colin Magazine, which is a cosplay and pop culture magazine based out of Melbourne.
Hey.
Wow, it's so cool to hear from some of Melbourne's local cosplayers. Speaking of local cosplayers, Jessie, I heard that you also cosplayed for DreamHack.
Oh, no, you don't have to expose me like that, bro. But at the time of airing, DreamHack would have been approximately a week ago, and it ran over 3 days. Ethan went on Friday, and I went on all 3 days. But for context, DreamHack is a gaming convention usually. There's like a lot of streamers. They do like gaming competitions there. You can bring your own PC and game there if you wanted to. I think Ethan also said there was like a podcast studio set up. But yeah, it was primarily a gaming convention. This is my first time going to DreamHack, but apparently they was trying to branch out into like more general pop culture stuff. They had Artist Alley, they had a cosplay competition, but also Trash Taste was there, and that was what happened on Friday. So, Ethan, would you like to explain who Trash Taste is?
So Trash Taste is like a podcast on YouTube by three YouTubers who do like anime related content. Oh, it's more so like Japanese related content, I reckon, because they all live in Japan now. So they've become very big among like the anime and gaming community on YouTube. Last year, they also showed up to DreamHack, but they only did it more as like a meet and greet. They did like some YouTube videos there as well. So this time they've got like a full live show. And Jesse and I were there. We watched the show and it was kind of incredible what the production value was. Like they had a DreamHack intro and that was like a 10-minute like mini rave section. And it was like had graphics and like music and like special effects. It was insane production value. What did you think about it? Because you're not as big of a fan,
I'm like a big fan, because I've only like watched / listened to their stuff occasionally if they pop up on my recommended. So I was like, okay, let's go see them in this show, and it was actually super duper fun to watch them and the banter they have with each other and the interactions they have with the audience. Yeah, it was very enjoyable. I could not stop smiling for the entire like 2 hours that it was going on for. They had a lot of fun interactions with the audience. Connor dressed up in a maid costume. Joey did a very classic Australian thing that we cannot talk about on air. They had a few activities and yeah, it was overall a very fun time. The one thing I was a bit disappointed by is that they did try to include the audience in their like the activities that they did, obviously, but the people were only passing the mics down to like the people that like paid for like express seating or like guaranteed seating in like the very front. So the people up on the stands who had to line up to get in there were not given the opportunity to contribute, which in some ways makes sense because then the people with the mics would be running around everywhere. But yeah, I saw like a lot of people in the stands raising their hands and they just never got to them. It was so sad. Did you have anything else to add with regards to Trash Taste and your day on Friday, Ethan?
I think backtracking a little bit when you talked about it being a gaming convention, but also expanding out. Yeah, I definitely noticed that. Like, I've never been to DreamHack before, but I've been to like a bunch of other conventions. And DreamHack felt really similar to like a Crunchyroll or like a Mad Men or even like a Supernova or anything. I was a bit confused because DreamHack is supposed to be like an esports gaming thing, but in terms of like the actual gaming stuff, they didn't have that much. Like, I mean, they did have stuff, obviously, but it wasn't that much more different to every other convention. Yeah, I don't know. I just would have liked to seen a bit more esports, a bit more exhibitions on like new games or like new creators.
I think in that respect, I think PAX later on down the year is probably more of that. DreamHack, I feel like, is more for like gamers and streamers and people who just play the games rather than like new games highlighting like.
Yeah, I think I was going into it expecting it to be people who like more so in like the gaming industry and like people who make the games, whereas it was very much more focused on like content creators and cosplayers and stuff. Like they had a section that was for like streaming, like literally like I don't know, like 12 different streaming setup stations where people could just go in and stream. And then also there were people who were like live streaming the entire way through and walking, you know, like around like real life streaming, which I think Jesse has some experience with.
I will say that this con is different from a lot of the other cons I've been to. In a few ways, but one of the major things I noticed is that there are just cameras everywhere, whether that be like official media with like media passes or like just streamers holding their little phones or cameras on the tripod setup that they had. There was cameras everywhere. You could not avoid it. So before I get into the next little bit about some of the cons at this convention, I will put a little trigger warning that it will involve mentions of like harassment and just some disrespectful behavior from a certain demographic of people. Just putting it out there, I know that not all of the people in this demographic, some of them were probably very respectful, but I will say coming out of this convention, one of the biggest things I noticed is that there was just a huge amount of people, a lot of them cosplayers, that were coming out about like just how much like verbal and also like physical harassment that they experienced from streamers. Stories of like them being like yelled certain things from like down the hall, being touched without permission, touching their props without permission. No, which is a big no-no in the cosplay community. Like con etiquette is basically you ask before you do anything, before you like take photos with the cosplayer, before you touch anything of theirs. There was like a story of a guy that posted this on like a Facebook group that was like, oh, this streamer came up to me and opened the coffin prop that I made, filmed inside, did not ask me, and then just walked away. So overall, just very disrespectful behavior. Not even just like people from like outside it's not even like people that I didn't know that was telling me this. Like a lot of my close friends that went and a lot of like other people that I went with were also being like, oh yeah, there was like people that were just not asking. They were just very disrespectful. And it's just like, I guess this is like just like a PSA to like streamers. Like don't be weird. Don't be creepy. It kind of just ruins the experience for everyone. And it's kind of crazy to me how like coming out of the con, you could just immediately see like just how many people had gone through like the same experience. So yeah, I think DreamHack trying to expand into like more of like pop culture realm means obviously also means that they will have more cosplayers and more people from like other interest areas slash fandoms coming to their conventions, especially since they had like a cosplay competition this time around. And I think for next time they probably should do more for like to like prevent stuff like this happening. And I also heard stories, I don't know how true these were, but like I heard stories about people that were like, oh, I told the staff, but they weren't really able to do anything about what this that happened to me, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think like Slave with DreamHack were trying to expand, but also like please do take precautions.
Like DreamHack obviously is trying to promote this culture of like streamers and, you know, like live streaming and gaming community and stuff, which is awesome. But I also think that when you have an area where you've got people cosplaying and stuff and they've put a lot of effort into this, and then you've also got people running around with cameras trying to film stuff with a little crew that expect to be the protagonist of their own live stream show, it kind of creates this environment that feels very unsafe, I guess, for a lot of people. Like I like my experience is nowhere near as bad as Jesse or like all these other cosplayers, but me and my friends were also lining up to do this activity, like to do Just Dance, and we had this guy come in who was like the live streamer, and he was surrounded by like three or four other people, his like crew of people. I don't know, it's just a weird thing where you feel like you're there kind of as like background characters to like these weird like live streamers. Yeah, also it sucks that the DreamHack staff didn't do anything. That's actually kind of dangerous and potentially
I think the expectation for most cons is that the staff will really like kick those people out or do something about it. But I feel like since they had like I think collaborations with like what was that streaming platform again?
Kick.
I forgot, but like yeah, Kick. I think they had a collaboration with like Kick. It's a streaming platform that's very similar to Twitch, but apparently a lot less a lot more sus. But yes, because they had a collaboration with that streaming platform, there was a lot of streamers from there, and they notoriously do not have the best behavior. And since they had a collaboration with them, maybe they couldn't kick them out. But I don't know.
If you, dear listener, have been to DreamHack, or if you also have experiences with conventions, let us know your story in the comments below.
Now, what you hear on Asian Pop Nation stays on Asian Pop Nation, which I know beats the whole point of being a radio show, but we hope to reinforce this message with this king who is back after a 5-year hiatus, and that's Luke Chiang and his song Never Tell.
You're listening to Asian Pop Nation on Sin, and that song was Chicagoro by Bialystox. Before that, we played Love a Girl by local artist Wild Gloriosa and Never Tell by Luke Chiang. And what I will tell you is that this is Luke's first new music released after a 5-year hiatus caused by him being diagnosed with a throat disease, and it's good to see that he's recovered enough to sing again. In this next segment, we're going to be going over some well-trodden ground here on APN, namely the topic of Asian food. While in the past we've typically talked about food that is fun and wacky, in this segment we're going to be talking about food and food experiences that we miss from the motherland. Without further ado, I'll let Lee take it away.
Hey, it's me. I haven't spoken the entire show, so here I am. Yes, our segments so far, if you have been tuning in from the start, have been heavier than usual. So we thought to finish off the show would bring back an APN food segment. Woo! Haven't done this in a while. Yeah, so we're going to finish up with a little bit of lighthearted discussion on, I guess, some food dishes that we miss from our home countries. Yay! Oh my god, Annabella, you want to start? Let's hear it.
I'm so eager to start. Yes, I've been waiting for this moment my entire life.
Whoa, take it away. The mic is yours, queen.
That's a lie. I've been like listening off air to you guys talking about like Malaysian food, and honestly, every like second food that comes up, I have to like look it up because I'm like, I'm sure there's an equivalent in Indonesian, but I'm I have no clue what this is. But then I'm like, yes, I do know. So I've been thinking of my own sort of foods. My favorite food ever is like bakso. It's like Chinese Indonesian influenced dish. It's like a noodle soup with beef balls. And so, yeah, I say my favorite genre of foods is like noodle soup. So I love all noodle soups, but bakso, like they'll sell it on like the vendors outside. They'll have like the noodles and like a big like bowl of like all these meatballs. And actually one time at my dad's hometown, I have a lot of like cousins, and we had this like Christmas party, and they actually hired one of those vendors to like come to our like house, because I have like 14 or so cousins. There are so many people. And so we just had this like one bakso vendor guy just make us it, and it was awesome. So that's what I miss.
Damn, that sounds so good right now. You can't even hear, but like my tummy is literally grumbling right now.
No, I'm like, why are we talking about this in like the middle of the night? Because I was like, as Annabelle was like describing the like place that she would get it outside in a stall and how it looks like, and plus with the Google images right in front of me, I am like salivating. That sounds so good. I mean, Ethan, as fellow man who knows a thing about Indonesia, is that something you feel like you kind of miss as well? Or, I mean, do you get that fix already? And there's, like, something else you like more?
Firstly, I actually like bakso a lot. But I think my favorite noodle, like, Indonesian noodle dish is a dish called mie ayam, which is, like,
a dry so noodle. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
I had it last night,
like,
actually.
Oh, really? Where do you get it from?
No, my dad made it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like, yeah.
Damn. It's guess not I have to just go back. No, actually, my favorite thing from Indonesia isn't a food. It's actually a drink. It's called soda gembira, which is like...
soda gembira. Yes.
Yeah, so I think we have this sort of in Singapore and Malaysia. It's like bandung. It's like a rose syrup drink. But in Indonesia, they do, like, I can't explain how, but it's just different. And I think they use like soda as well. So
yeah,
it's like,
they have like
it's really
strawberry
good.
Fanta.
Yeah. That's what I'm reading.
I think
so.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's like a milky rose syrup.
Yeah,
soft
condensed
drink.
Milk.
Yeah, it's
but
good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Yeah. What about across
literally
the pond in Malaysia?
Literally translates to
happy soda, right?
Yes.
Sorry, I cut you off there. Yeah, it's really good. I can't, I don't know if they sell that in Australia, but yeah, they should. So
it's so pretty. All they need to do is like have one shop serve it, get influencers in that place, and soon everyone will be serving.
Yeah,
Malaysians, what's happening over there?
Wow, so glad you asked, because I'm gonna pass the mic to Leisha.
Whoa, why me? What the hell?
Because you have some stuff on this list, right?
No, I don't. I did not write a single one of those, minus like a photo at the bottom. But that's... all of this is not me, besides my mom's cooking. I do miss my mom's cooking a lot.
And where is she right now? In Malaysia.
But in Malaysia, yeah. I would say like when I was younger, she was probably like, oh my God, when I like first came to Australia, so like 2012, till like maybe circa like 2016, my mom's food was literally my only like, I guess, connection to even eating any sort of Malaysian food, because I think Malaysian food was just one of those cuisines that like there wasn't a lot of it at all. If I go to like the CBD or something, like there'll only be one mamak in the CBD, but other than that, like we just didn't have that much exposure. But I'll say like throughout the years, there's so much more Malaysian restaurants now that they do like, oh, the tip, like, I guess I say typical Malaysian food, like nasi lemak and stuff like that. But they also now venture out into like Malaysian Chinese food, like char kway teow, or like Malaysian Indian food with banana leaf rice and stuff like that. So now there's a lot more on that. So I feel like I actually don't miss Malaysian food as much anymore, because I feel like I kind of can get it here. I just kind of miss how cheap it is to get it. Uh-huh. Supposed to hear, like, that's my problem now. I go and like get my like char kway teow, and I'm like, oh, in Malaysia I could get this for like 15 ringgit only, which is the equivalent of like what, like $5, but here I'm paying like $25 to eat that. So I love life. But Lee, I don't know, what about you? Do you resonate, or is there like actually stuff that you still really miss from the motherland?
Okay, so until recently, I really missed like the... So let me bring this back to when I went back to Malaysia. So one of my favorite foods is wonton mee, which is like wonton noodles. And I remember having it as a kid and be like, damn, this gotta be one of the foods of all time. And like, I went back recently and it just did not taste the same. And from then on, I've just been like... I guess like sad about not being ever able to taste that childhood nostalgic flavor ever again. But recently I found this restaurant in Box Hill, top one wonton mee ever. And I was talking about this off air, like everyone gotta go. But they do the same. Like when I tasted it, I was like, whoa, I'm back in like Malaysia, obviously, like without the plastic chairs and the sticky tables and stuff. But like, it was crazy. It like literally brought me back to my childhood in Malaysia. But other than that, as I said before, like the plastic stools and the sticky tables, that's like the street food experience. And I guess I kind of miss that as well. Lisha, like, you know, like if you go to like a mamak in the middle of the night, it's just like the fan, like the fluorescent lights, and then like this fan with like flies everywhere. In, well, actually that sounds bad, but
yeah, wait, like, you're making it sound so unappealing.
Yeah, but it's like that street food experience, also like the bad customer service and the food vendors and stuff.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel the same of like, I feel like nowadays what I miss more is that the environment in which I'm getting all these Malaysian foods, less than the food itself. Especially mamaks, now that you mentioned, like to me, mamaks are like the peak of eating out in Malaysia.
It's at midnight as well.
And midnight as well, because they're open like all the time. And also it's just such like an experience, especially if Malaysia has its doses of sports that we love to watch. Soccer is notoriously one, and then badminton as well. And when there are big matches that go down in these places, like you can always go to a mama and they have like a big ass TV, or some of them rent out a massive projector just to like show all these sports. And then you can rock up to a mama stall and it is like a full experience. Plus you're getting very good food while you're in there, but it's like a full vibe. Everyone's like shouting for their favorite players, but it's like such a good experience. I feel like here in Australia you can only get them that sort of vibe in places that we can't mention on Sin. But other than that, if you're somebody if you're just like a everyday Joe or whatever, like in Malaysia you can just go to a mama. Like mamaks are, they're like a hug. They're comforting. Mm-hmm. They're good vibes. But again, also notorious to have like nothing is really fixed in there. Wooden like chair, like stools and stuff. The red plastic chairs. Sometimes bad customer service, but that's something I also low key miss because I am not a small talk person. But yeah, it's like, something about that, it's like, oh, so nostalgic. I know if you're probably like a white person going to an Asian country for the first time, that's like, you're going to be like culture shock moment. But that's something I miss so much. That's more for me. But yeah.
So that's a selection of some of the foods that we've really been missing from the homeland. The foods and the dining experiences we've been missing, I guess. If that, you know, struck chord with any of you and you have any foods that you also miss from your motherland, DM us on our Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. We'd love to hear about it. And hopefully you find an equivalent in Melbourne sometime.
Speaking of comfort foods, the next song we have in store for you here on Asian Pop Nation is Popcorn by Do Kyung-soo of EXO. This is his first release on his own label called Company Susu. Yeehaw! That was Country Road by Hirai Dai, and before that you heard Popcorn by Do Kyung-soo. My name is Tracy and I'm here to wrap up the show and tell everyone to go to bed. You know, you gotta get up tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in to Asian Pop Nation. Tonight you heard from Lisha, Lee, Jesse, Ethan, Annabella, Xenia, and me. We talked about the Hybe and Adore mudslinging fest that's happening over in K-pop entertainment company land right now. We also talked about the fun and not so fun parts of the recent DreamHack convention in Melbourne. And finally, we did some reminiscing about food from the motherland that we miss. Speaking of reminiscence, the last song we'll be playing is a very nostalgic and wistful one. It's called Back in the Days by indie singer-songwriter Kim Soo-young. And with that, I hope you all have a great night and we'll see you next week. This is Asian Pop Nation signing out for tonight.